I'm ready to make my credits count.
I'm ready to take classes from a university that will help me build on my experience to prepare me for the future.
A university that will make me feel supported, encouraged, and connected.
Click this ad or go to online.odu.edu today.
Hey guys, Greg here. This week's episode of the show is going to sound a little weird. I've been having some trouble with my recording. I actually lost an hour-long episode with James Hamm last week, which really sucks because it was really awesome, and I said tons of smart things. But this week, while I'm getting my issues figured out, Deuce Mason was kind enough to record the episode for me, so it's going to sound like I'm calling into him instead of vice versa, and it's just because he was doing me a favor. Everything else should be fine, though. Be sure to check it out. It's a fun episode. Listen all the way to the end for your special prize. All right, here it goes.
Today's episode of the Sacktown Royalty Show is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider in spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want.
It's the Sacktown Royalty Show. Here's your host, Greg Wissinger.
Welcome to the Sacktown Royalty Show. I'm your host, Greg Wissinger. Excited to be welcoming back to the program our friend Dave Deuce Mason. Deuce, how you doing?
Dude, I'm great. How are you, man?
I'm good. I'm tired, and the Kings look tired as they wrap up their road trip.
Oh, man, they looked really tired tonight.
I mean, we're recording this on Tuesday after the blowout loss to the Rockets, so it's always a good time to talk about the Kings right after a couple of disappointing losses, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not too disappointed with tonight. I'm more disappointed with the Philly game. You know, like tonight, it sucks because had to throw 100%. The Philly game into the road trip because it was a makeup game, but like this one, I didn't really expect anything. The Philly one kills me because Embiid wasn't playing, and you had that nice lead, and the defense was just awful.
Yeah, I mean, the Philly loss, I agree, was far less excusable than, you know, the third back-to-back of the road trip thanks to putting the Philly game in there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, that's a brutal road trip the Kings just wrapped up, and now they're going to head back to Golden 1 for basically a month in the state of California.
Which, yeah, you would think would be a good thing. I think the weird thing about this team, well, one of the many weird things, they just haven't played well at home. And even though they have 8 wins at home, and even in the games they've won, you know, you haven't felt that energy yet in the new building. They haven't really given the fans much to cheer for. I think 8 wins might be one of the fewest in the NBA. I know it's tied with Phoenix for the fewest home wins in the Western Conference. And you got to start getting some of these home wins because it's fine to be competitive on the road. Like, they took steps on this road trip, I think. And for them to go 3-5, I was pretty surprised with that. But you have to start winning some home games if you think you have any shot at the 8th seed.
Yeah, like, if we're looking at it from the optimist viewpoint, which I tend to lean towards personally, I think it's more fun to be an optimist, but sometimes the team makes me a pessimist.
Yeah.
But everyone's been pointing all season, like, well, just wait till February. That's when the schedule balances out. The Kings have an easier schedule, a home schedule, all of this. So it's really about to be put up or shut up time for the Kings.
It is. And I look at the schedule. You have Golden State twice in February. That's not easy. You got Boston coming to town. Atlanta's not going to be an easy game. The Pelicans are playing better. Denver could give you some issues. You know, they score. We saw Charlotte. They didn't look very good. Minnesota, you know, they seem like they're showing signs. I don't know. I look at the schedule coming up in February. I go, it's not the easiest schedule. Yeah, you benefit from being at home, you would like to think, but you also just had a long homestand in which you really crapped the bed in. So you're right. It's going to be a time for them to put up or shut up. They got to prove it now. And it's just frustrating that they had that homestand right before the road trip and they couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there's one thing that this team has taught us is that nothing can be taken for granted. I mean,
right.
Those games against tough teams, who knows? The Kings could come out and play like they did against Cleveland.
Sure.
And close out a tough win. I mean,
the Kings have certainly shown themselves capable of beating good teams on any given night, but they also have shown themselves capable of blowing games that should be easy wins. It's hard to figure out what to expect night to night.
And I know some fans are still looking at the 8 seed, and for a while it was like, man, the Kings are just in a funk, and they're still, you know, half game out. Here they are, where some people feel like they're actually playing better basketball now, just a 3-5 road trip, which some teams wouldn't consider is great, but it's still, hey, you're on the road, it's always tough. You just had 4 games in 5 nights, too. Here they are, they're sitting 3.5 out of the 8th spot, and, you know, all of a sudden you got Minnesota, who's playing much better. They've won 7 of 10, you know. Portland's 500 over the last 10. The Nuggets, they've been scoring like crazy, you know. So teams in the West are starting to play better. Hell, Dallas is all of a sudden like playing better now. Seth Curry's playing well. So you got to start putting it together at some point. And this home stretch is going to be pretty significant if this team wants to make a realistic run.
Kings don't have a lot of luck going their way right off the bat. I mean, got 2 guys banged up in Houston. I mean, Temple, it sounded like just a hamstring strain. He's going to have an MRI Wednesday morning. He doesn't think it's anything too serious, but he knew it was more than just like a cramp or whatever. He said right off the bat he knew it was something more. And then we find out after the game that Lawson went and got x-rays in the middle of the game, and that's why he only played 11 minutes. Mm. And x-ray came back negative, but it sounds like he's kind of bruised and maybe going to be a little tender. It doesn't sound like he's really missing time, but, I mean, the injuries are starting to bite the Kings, which, I mean, this is after – losing Rudy Gay, and then Caspi's been out for a while now. And, you know, I mean, the injury bug's not helping anything. And the Kings weren't that good before they got hurt.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you lose Temple for any period of time, that's going to hurt you a lot. You know, I think he's been one of my favorite guys to watch this year. Just what he brings as a perimeter defender. He does so many things that, like, don't show up on the box score, just hustle plays. He's a smart player, what he does in the locker room. So hopefully he's not going to miss too much time. And, you know, even Ty Lawson, I think he's surpassed expectations around here, especially with the way it started. I mean, the guy missing the team flight early in what training camp, and it's like, oh crap, what's this guy doing? He's been pretty solid this year. I've been somewhat pleased with him.
Yeah, we had a discussion breakout in one of our threads in the past week or so, kind of talking about Ty Lawson and the expectations coming into the year, where, I mean, I was as vocal as anyone that I wasn't really on board with the signing. He hadn't played well in his previous 2 stops last year, had his off the court issues, obviously, but I mean, so far pleasantly surprised with his play on the court, and he's kept himself out of trouble so far. But I kind of made the comment in the thread that I still always feel like I'm kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop with Ty.
Yes, exactly. Like, especially as a Kings fan, right?
Yeah, like, you never feel comfortable, like, all right, he's turned it around. Like, and I don't know if that's fair to him or not. I mean, hopefully things are good with him, but, I mean, it's not that anyone wishes him ill, but, yeah, it's just, that would be some Kings level luck right there.
Exactly. I think the most positive thing from this road trip, though, I don't think there's any disputing this, the emergence of Willie Cauley-Stein and Malachi actually getting some run. I mean, Willie, I was really worried for a while, and he's showing signs of life. I think him playing with Ty Lawson, he's just playing his game. Be that rim runner. He even showed a little 17-footer the other game. So I'm just encouraged that he's getting some playing time. I was on the side that, hey, if they're trying to get the 8 seed and they're going to be below 500 and they're playing like Matt Barnes a ton and some of those guys and not playing their young guys, that's not a good thing. And now that they seem to play a little better, you know, despite the last couple of games, and Malachi's getting some run and so is Willie, that's encouraging to me. Like, I could live with them getting the 8 spot if Malachi and Willie are playing some significant minutes down the stretch.
Absolutely. Like, if you're developing young guys and making a little bit of a run at, you know, maybe a fringe playoff spot, absolutely, let's do that. Like,
right.
I'm on board. You don't have to sell me on that. I, to your point, though, it's if you're sacrificing any sort of youth development when you've got 3 rookies and,
yep,
you know, 1 second-year player on the roster that you've spent, you know, considerable assets to get, I mean, you want to see something come from those guys. And I'm with you. I was writing off Willie Cauley-Stein at the start of this year that, oh, he showed some flashes as a rookie, but he looks checked out. He's not playing well. Let's cash in while we can get anything for him.
Yeah.
Before he's the next Ben McAdoo. Like, I was fully on board with selling low on Willie. And I mean, I've been really happily surprised and happy to be wrong, as I often am. You know?
I mean, it is a small stretch of games, but at least there's that sign of life. And that's what you want to see with young players. You know, we're going so long with, man, okay, the Kings are losing a lot of games. Willie's not playing. Of course, Ben's not playing. His time's pretty much done in Sacramento. Malachi's not playing, and the two other rookies aren't really ready. This is probably not a good thing right now, you know? So it is encouraging that I'm seeing Malachi, and I'm not trying to overreact with Malachi. I just see a player there. And I know on defense, he's got a long way to go. That's typical for rookies, especially at that position. But he just looks confident on the offensive side of the ball, right? Like, he looks like he's comfortable shooting the ball. He can get to the rim a little bit. I've been pleasantly surprised with what I've seen in limited action from him.
I think the biggest thing that I think is refreshing to see out of Malachi is something that we've begged to see from multiple Sacramento Kings, is that he's aggressive. He doesn't hesitate to take his shot when it's there. I mean, that's a frustration I still have with Darren Collison, is that he doesn't take a shot when it's there. And I mean, he's been in the league however many years now. I mean, so to see that from a rookie and to have it not be backfiring is a really nice thing to see.
Absolutely. This, you know, this has been a pretty positive podcast to start.
So let's talk about how Boogie is definitely getting traded to Phoenix.
Oh my goodness. I have a rule. I really have a rule with this. Okay. And this comes from a guy who, you know, spent a lot of my career in radio. I mean, I still work on the Kings radio broadcast, but I've always said this, even when I was in radio, I never trust radio guys when it comes to breaking news about trades or potential trade rumors. I just don't, because they hear something and they're more likely to just spout it off without double checking it. You know, they're not trained to be like journalists, to really dig in there. Like, they're not Woj. It's not Sam Amick, you know, Zach Lowe, some of the big guys who break stories all the time. Like, that's what they do. Radio guys, let's be honest, radio guys have these hot takes and they're ready to go. They hear one little rumor and they just run with it. That's how I look at it. So my rule is, I never trust some radio guy reporting any trade rumors.
Man, shots fired at Carmichael Dave right now.
I was bringing up the guy in Arizona. But you know what I mean? Seriously, tell me the last time a radio guy broke a significant trade. I can't think of it.
To his credit, the guy in Phoenix from my friends who were our son's writers,
yeah,
they say that he actually is a guy who does break trade news.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
It's just that, yeah, like, I mean,
so I'm just talking about my trust level. Like, it's not Mark Stein. Yeah. It's not Woj to me. It's not Amick. So I'm not really going to go, oh my God, I'm concerned that they're going to trade him to Phoenix. I mean, you look at the, I'm sorry. If they're calling, they're picking up the phone and say, hey, we want Boogie, and they're dropping Alex Lynn. And who else was it? I'm trying to remember the other name. TJ Warren. I'm sorry, I'm hanging up the phone. Like, that's not really, like, you better start with Devin Booker's coming here, right? Some picks. What else are you throwing my way? Is Bledsoe coming back too? Like, there has to be more of a package than dropping those two guys and maybe a pick.
You know what this rumor kind of strikes me as? It obviously is something that's being floated from the Phoenix front office to a Phoenix radio personality who's going to just share it, kind of to your point. He's not going to dig deeper.
Yeah,
he's not going to talk about how far talks went. He's just going to kind of repeat what he was told. And it seems to me like this is probably a discussion that maybe happened before the details of the new CBA came out, when it became clear that the Kings were going to be re-signing DeMarcus Cousins.
Sure.
Like, if you're thinking about, okay, this is a half-season rental with the risk that Boogie could not re-sign in Phoenix, that trade package makes a lot more sense to me.
Right. No, that makes sense.
Like, a high draft pick and a couple of young players to kind of go along with it and make salaries work. Like, that kind of makes a little bit of sense. But then when the new CBA details came out,
right,
the exception that the Kings will be able to offer Cousins like $80 million more than anyone else
exactly.
can.
Exactly.
I imagine this all went right out the window. So I'm not doubting that it was probably a real conversation at some point, the question with these things you always got to ask is just how far did it go and when did this actually happen? And so I don't think that this is anything imminent or anything that has any legs whatsoever.
I agree with you on that.
In fact, I don't think we would have written about it if it wasn't for the fact that everyone started talking about it on Twitter as soon as like the story came out.
I mean, I get it. I mean, those rumors come out and instant. I mean, everyone picks it up, right? Like Hoops Hype starts tweeting about it. You know, ESPN's writing a story about it. It's the day and age we live. And we crave rumors. Like, it is fun to read the rumors, right? Even if they're kind of ridiculous.
Oh, absolutely.
It's so fun to be like, okay, well, let's see. Is this realistic? Or, oh, let me play around with this. Let's see if I could tweak this, you know, like playing fantasy GM, you know?
And, I mean, I've always thought it would be a stretch for the Kings to trade Cousins, well, anywhere. But if they did it, in division seems kind of a non-starter. But if you were going to and you were okay with trading in division, I mean, Phoenix does have an appealing set of assets. They've got tons of young guys with a lot of upside.
Yeah.
They do have a stockpile of draft picks. So, you know, if they were talking to teams at any point and gauging value, which would be normal and expected.
Sure.
You know, I wouldn't think it would be surprising that they would have had a conversation with Phoenix at some point.
Yeah, I would not be surprised at that. I mean, I'm sure they've had conversations with multiple teams about Cousins at one point or another. Who knows how far those went. But, I mean, I know there's so much, there's such a split with this fan base too, right? Like, some people are like, oh, Cousins, everything he does is negative. He loses, trade him. And then you got the other people who are so obsessed with the numbers he puts up, see the talent he has, and it's like, no, you keep him here forever. But I think as an organization, when you're not winning games and you haven't won games in forever, you're going to go 11 straight years now without making the playoffs, you have to consider all options. I think you have to explore opportunities. It doesn't mean you're like, hey, I'm going to trade DeMarcus Cousins, but you're going to listen to offers. I think that's fair. You're going to listen to it. And obviously things have changed now with the new CBA, but I, you know, obviously the Kings would listen to offers at one point. It'd be ridiculous not to.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've tended to lean more towards the don't trade him because the odds of the Kings ever getting the talent of this level, you know, in the next decade are slim and none, but you still listen. Yeah. To your point. I mean, no players, the old adage that no player is untradeable. I mean, you get the right offer, anyone can be traded. It's just that that offer is usually not there for some guys.
You know, you're right. And I was listening to Zach Lowe's podcast last week after the ESPN story came out. And I've talked about this before on our podcast, just how unusual this situation is that we have in Sacramento with DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, it is rare that you have a guy that is so talented. No one's going to deny his talent, right? That has not won. And it's not all his fault, all right? But it is so unusual, right? He's been here 7 years. And, you know, you try to come up with a scenario in your head of, okay, how is this compared to other situations? You really can't compare it to anything else. Because typically what happens is if you have a guy who's super talented and a team's not winning, either A, the guy demands a trade at some point. He's like, screw this. Give me to a winner. All right, I'm done being here. I'm done with the BS. I'm done with the coaching changes. There's so much drama here. I want out. Or B, the team's like, we don't win with you. Like, we're going to trade you. Like, it doesn't make sense here. We're going to go ahead and move you. But it's crazy. Obviously, that hasn't happened yet. And it would be one of the weird stories in NBA history if DeMarcus Cousins remained with the Kings and somehow it did turn around. Because we haven't seen anything like it. It would be pretty remarkable if DeMarcus Cousins remains in Sacramento, signs an extension, and all of a sudden the Kings in 3 years from now, they're winning 50 games a year. It would be a remarkable NBA story.
The situation that it reminds me the most of was Kevin Garnett in Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, but Kevin Garnett, like, they got to the playoffs. They just got bounced in the first round every year forever before actually advancing that year, of course, you know, with Cassell and Sprewell.
Sure.
They were still getting to the playoffs, and the question was, God, can Kevin Garnett ever get out of the first round, right? At least they saw they saw something there where they were winning. Sacramento has never been close to winning, which it's just an unusual situation. And, hey, why can't Sacramento be the first, I guess, right? Why, it would be weird, but, you know, there's a first time for everything.
In the Kings' defense, we've never had Tom Gugliotta.
Good point. A lot of teams did. I mean, we did not.
Yeah. So I don't think that can really be held against us. He obviously was the playoff glue that got them there. So
exactly.
So as we move into February, obviously everything turns to the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the Kings are going to do? Or not even what do you think they're going to do, because that's nearly impossible to predict. But if you're – let's put you in the GM seat. You're Vlade for a few days. What is it you're trying to accomplish with the team at this point?
Well, that's a tough one. I don't think you should be chasing the eighth spot. I think – the mindset, and I'm trying to take my, God, you're saying I'm not Vlade, but it's pretty apparent that they want to re-sign DeMarcus Cousins. They want to give him that extension. So I'm just going to use that as like, yeah, they are giving him an extension. I mean, mm-hmm. I want to see Malachi play like 20, 25 minutes a game. I want to see Willie play a ton of minutes. I don't think you benefit from playing Matt Barnes a ton of minutes. I just don't understand what the point would be of doing that. I would try to turn a couple of those guys, Tolliver, and I like Tolliver, he's fine. Tolliver, Aflalo, Barnes, even Loss. If you could turn that in to like trade it to some sort of contending team that needs an extra piece, and maybe you get like an asset back, whether that's a young guy who maybe doesn't fit in with that team or they don't really have room for him right now. He's not ready to play, or maybe it's like a draft pick. I don't know. That's what I would be looking at. I just look at how the eight seed is so bunched up right now, and I just don't think it's realistic. I mean, they could prove me wrong after, you know, this month of February, but as it's standing right now, you have so many teams vying for that eighth and final spot. You wonder if Portland, even though they're playing better, is going to be able to turn it on after making the playoffs last year. Is Denver really ready to make that leap? I'm not so sure, but at least they're playing young guys, right? They have a core of young guys that they are playing every single night. Minnesota, they are playing young guys. They're developing them. New Orleans, they're kind of a weird roster, got off to a terrible start. You know, they seem to be injury prone. Dallas, you know, if they've had their injuries, they're playing young guys now, but they're playing better basketball. So you have all those teams I just named that are like fighting for the eighth spot. I think you're better off not making the eighth spot and just play, develop these guys, you know, and I said, turn one of these veterans into, I don't know, a younger piece. I'm not saying you're going to get some young star from it, but see what you can get. I just don't think you benefit from playing Matt Barnes a ton of minutes.
I agree. I think the Barnes situation is probably the trickiest thing to navigate going into trade season, because I don't think there's teams out there clamoring for a guy who's got a pending misdemeanor in New York.
No, and, you're right.
You know, is on the wrong side of 37 at this point.
Yeah. I guess my point is you look to those veterans that you have on the roster that could help a team. Maybe you could chop them. And I just lump Barnes into there. And obviously with his situation, there's probably not a lot of teams who would want him at this point.
I mean, it feels like of all the guys that you could maybe unload, I'm struggling to figure out what the situation is where you end up in a position where Jaeger's not still playing Barnes a ton.
I know, right? He likes playing him. I don't know. What would you do at the trade deadline?
I think I'm still trying to move Kosta Koufos.
Okay, see, and that's a guy I left off too. Okay, Kosta. Okay, another perfect example. I'm playing Willie more. I'm shopping Kosta too. What can I get for him? You know?
Because, I mean, he's still starting a lot of times, but he's only playing like 15 minutes a game, which I'm not complaining about. I think it's better not to try to force the Cousins-Koufos pairing any more than Jaeger already does, but I think there's value there that a lot of teams thought that they were set with center over the summer. You know, I mean, we saw a ton of people throw out big money for big men. And it seemed like, okay, these teams have got it figured out. There's greater depth to the center market than we expected. And that's why Koufos didn't get traded over the summer. But I think a lot of those teams have realized, like, they don't like what they ended up with. I mean, the Lakers with Mozgov or the Wizards with Mahimi. And I mean, those teams out there that didn't end up with the big man that they thought they were getting, that would probably happily take a guy like Koufos on his contract, that he's under contract a couple more years. You know, with Rudy going down with injury, I think Koufos becomes your best trade asset.
Yeah, and the other benefit from Costa is his contract's not ridiculous. It's not a Mozgov deal. What's he making, like $8 million a year? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nothing. It's a reasonable deal, especially with how the salary cap's going to continue to rise and how much guys are getting paid around the league. Yeah, that's, I failed to mention him in that group, but yeah, I would definitely look to shop him. And I think you benefit from playing Willie down the stretch. You know, see what you have in him. You know, let Malachi get some run. And yeah, is he going to have games where he's terrible? Yeah, he's a rookie. But I want to see those guys. You know, that's the main thing going forward is I want to develop those younger guys. And I don't know. I obviously I understand why some people want the playoffs, right? It's a place you haven't been in forever. It's fun to have some playoff games. But when you look at their Kings roster, there's going to be so much turnover going into next year, right? I mean, look at all the deals that are coming up, right? Darren's a free agent. Ty's a free agent. Ben's going to be gone. I'm trying to think. I mean, it's easier to name the guys who are under contract. The three rookies, Cousins, Temple, and Cully Stein, I think. I think that's it, right? Oh, well, Matt Barnes, too. Sorry.
Yeah. Of course, Matt Barnes. Yeah. But then, I mean, you do have Aflalo and Tolliver who have basically, I mean, not actually, but essentially team options.
Well, they have the buyouts. So. Yeah, exactly. The buyouts. When
right.
I look, Tolliver's
at $1.5 million to where, yeah, they could be gone or they could stay. I mean, I don't think either of them's on an unreasonable contract.
No.
But I think that both of those were signed with the idea that there was decent shot, you know, 50-50 shot, they wouldn't be back on the team next season.
Exactly. Aflalo, what, $2.5 million buyout, and Tolliver, like $1.5 million. That's nothing.
Yeah, especially in the current cap situation. I mean, it's minimal.
Right.
Now, the other big question mark, of course, is if you go into the summer, is whether or not Rudy Gay opts in or out.
Oh, man. I mean, obviously, I think it depends on the progress of his rehab, but I think he's opted in. I mean,
you think so?
Well, I mean, why would he opt out? If he's not going to be able to play, let's just say he's not able to play until December of next year, January. I don't know when he's ready. I mean, the recovery time on that's pretty significant. And, yeah, we've seen players come back from it. Wes Matthews did. Wes Matthews has a different style of play than Rudy Gay, you know? I don't know. It's so hard. I'm not a doctor, so I don't know for sure when Rudy Gay is going to be able to come back and be ready. Everyone's body's different, obviously. But to me, if I'm Rudy, I'll just opt in. It's $14 million. I can come back, play with the Kings. I'll put up some good numbers and I'll cash in next year. But, I mean, there's a risk. What? I don't know. I just don't see teams lining up to sign Rudy Gay when he's coming off a torn Achilles.
So I'll tell you why I've become convinced in the past like week or so that
I
he's going to opt out. Still.
Okay. So they better hope so.
And I thought this was completely off the table until James Hamm started talking on his podcast about how he thinks Rudy will still opt out. They released Rudy Gay just this past week released like basically a statement saying that his timetable for return to action is basically training camp. Kind of setting that stage that, hey, I'll be back at the start of next season, like kind of planting that in on the radar for teams that might be interested in him. The other reason I think that he'll go ahead and opt out is because, yeah, he might. I mean, even if he takes a pay cut for the next year, which is possible, he's securing much more money long term for himself. And in the current cabinet, we look at the deals that, you know, you mentioned Wes Matthews. He got a max contract coming off of an Achilles.
Right. But
Absolutely. Yeah. You look at the deal that the Grizzlies gave Chandler Parsons.
That's a good point. That was terrible.
Coming off injury. Yep. And, like, I mean, all you need is one team to be dumb.
That's a fair point.
I mean, I think it could be a worthwhile gamble. And, you know, of course, his agent's going to have feelers out there and kind of figure out things. I think the other big thing is I just don't think he wants to spend another year tied to the Sacramento Kings.
I think that's the biggest point you just made right there that is on your side. No, I'm serious. I mean, I think if he could find a way where he can go get paid, and like you said, his agent, he's got a new agent, they're going to be putting feelers out. If he can find a way to get out and still get paid a little bit, he's going to do it. Yeah, $14 million is a lot, though. But you're right. If he can secure something, that's going to be interesting. And I'm sure the Kings are praying to the basketball gods. Go ahead, opt out, please. It's fine. Go ahead. We don't need you anymore. It's fine. Good luck.
But are you talking about the Kings or Vivek? Because Vivek's going to pair him and Boogie up with Westbrook, right? I mean,
Stop it. Oh, man. That was an interesting piece. Wow.
Yeah, I'm very sad that the hour-long podcast I had immediately after that piece came out, James Hamm and I spent like an hour talking about it and everything else, and my recording device failed and I lost all of the conversation. But so we can touch on that piece briefly. I mean,
yeah,
it's kind of in the past now, but I think the biggest thing that a lot of us took away from it was some of the specifics, and some of the specific stories may have been surprising, but overall, there wasn't a whole lot that really shocked us, I don't think.
I agree with that. I think some of it, I mean, it was a well-done article. I'm not taking anything away with it. I mean, from it, you know, I thought Kevin did a great job talking to a lot of people. And, you know, he spent a lot of time working on that piece. But you're right. There's a lot of stuff we already knew.
Yeah, and I think that the big accomplishment from it was that so much was able to be confirmed on the record.
Yeah, Cousins like opening up to him, I mean, was unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, getting people to confirm stories that make them look bad, that's a journalistic skill right there.
Like, yeah.
The piece was incredible because of how many stories got verified that you'd maybe heard rumors of or had been floating out and about, or you'd kind of gotten just the hint that something was there, and now it's like, yeah, Cousins confirmed that this happened. Like,
yeah.
And I mean, and it was one of those things that very few people came out of that story looking good, but when you listen to the podcast with Zach Lowe and Kevin Arnovitz after the fact, they took a less sour view on it than I would have expected, kind of saying that, these stories are with any team. We just happen to get them all pinned down for the Kings.
And that's probably part of the problem. I think hopefully going forward, you're going to hear less and less of that stuff. I mean, come on. This is pro sports. We're talking about the NBA where you have so many egos, so many owners, you know, especially with the Kings. I mean, they have so many owners in this group. So when things aren't going well, in any group, right? Naturally, someone else has a right answer. So they're going to speak up. And in this specific instance, in my opinion, you're going to have owners be more open to talking to the media, like off the record. Hey, you know what? This is what's going on. Because they feel like they have the answers. So they're going to go ahead and put their spin on it. That's what happens when things aren't going well. So hopefully going forward, you keep things more in-house. And, you know, the reality is, I'm a big believer in pro sports, and I think we've seen it really in with San Francisco 49ers. And there are so many examples of this. The owners can be super passionate. They spent a lot of money on their teams. You've seen this in Dallas, too, with the Mavericks. They're going to want to have say. They're going to want to have some say. But you have to trust the people you put in power to run the front office to just let them do it. You know, like, just have that trust. You can have a say, but let them do it. And that's something when I read the article, I was like, okay, well, hopefully we're learning from this mistake. I mean, Cuban was super hands-on. He still is, but he was way over the top in the beginning. Joe Lacob, the same way. Joe Lacob, I know the Warriors are winning. Joe Lacob's kind of crazy. And he's still been able to allow people in the front office like Jerry West and Bob Myers to do their thing. And it's worked out all right. Steve Kerr, they have trust. So any like organization just needs to have trust in their people. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I mean, if I was like a 2% owner of the Kings, and I haven't checked the paperwork, I might be for all I know.
True.
But if I was like a 2% owner, let alone like the majority stakeholder, like I would be insufferable.
Right.
With like having my fingerprints all over the team. So
exactly. And, you know, we laugh about the whole Westbrook, Rudy Gay, Cousins thing. Even though that is such a long shot thing, we all laugh about it. Like, we laugh about it, right? But do we really hate on Vivek for wanting that? I mean, maybe he's like, no, I feel like I can get a guy in a room and convince him of that. I don't know. I mean, is that really that bad of a thing if he wanted that? I mean, I know it's not realistic. Don't get me wrong. Not realistic.
That's the issue. I think that's okay. The issue is that I don't think anyone hates on the idea that someone has aspirations for that. I think where the mockery starts to come in is when it's like, Rudy Gay's wanted out of here for like a year and a half, and you're convinced that you're going to keep him and pair him with a guy that Oklahoma City's not giving up.
Like, no, and I get that. But here, I'm trying to think of it from like Vivek's standpoint. This guy has done so much in his life, like so much success, building companies, whatever, you know, everything he's done, right? You think he looks at this and goes, you know what? I'm not going to be able to do this. He's going, hell yeah, I'm going to do this. This is nothing. I built this huge company, TIBCO. I bought this team. I helped keep it here inside. You think he's looking at it going, yeah, I don't think I can do that. He's going to try his damnedest. He's going to have that belief. I mean, it's a little off, but no doubt about it. But I don't know. I didn't that part didn't bug me too much. I always think, wow, he really thinks he can do that. And I'm sure he really thought, yeah, I can keep Rudy here. but I don't know. The article to me, some people may have felt worse after reading it. I felt the same. The reality is I just want to get back to playing basketball. Can we just start talking about the games? I'm so sick of reading about the Kings in the news for drama like that. And it sucked. The timing of it comes the day after the Kings beat the Cavs in overtime in Cleveland. It was such a positive day for Kings fans. They wake up. They're looking forward to going on social media, going to Sacktown Royalty, talking about the game, and then boom, ESPN.com. Oh, there's a piece on the Kings. Let's check it out. And it's, oh no, it's some of the old stuff again. It's negative stuff, and it just kind of brings you down.
Yeah, the timing on that's funny. And obviously with a piece of that length, like it's pre-scheduled. It's
sure,
not like they
absolutely
decided, like,
right,
let's stick it to Kings fans.
No, exactly.
But yeah, we got to enjoy that win for like 6 hours.
Yeah. I don't think there's some wild conspiracy, like, we got to release it now. We'll get to those Kings fans. I don't think it's anything like that. I just felt, you know,
ESPN hates the Kings.
I just felt bad for Kings fans that day. Like, it was like, ugh.
Yeah.
Really? Like, we can't just like enjoy the whole like beating LeBron thing in overtime. Just give me like 36 hours. That's all I want. It had to have been like boom right then. But you know, it obviously didn't impact them too much. I don't think it's not like I felt like that impacted their play on the floor. It's not like Cousins saw that piece and started playing like crap. You know what I mean? Like, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
With the exception of tonight, I mean, I think Cousins is playing some of the best basketball of his career, and the way he's passing the ball, the way he's handling physicality, it's super encouraging right now. I know those turnovers were a little high, obviously, against Philly. He had, what, 8 turnovers? But, man, some of the passes he's making. He had that one against Philly on Monday night. Where's that full court, one-handed bounce pass to Darren Collison, who missed the layup? I mean,
oh, that was such a pretty pass. Oh,
that was beautiful. It was great. I really do think he's playing the best basketball of his career.
I do, too, which is crazy because, like, I felt like he was pretty good coming into the start of the year, and even though the team wasn't really playing well, he was putting up really great numbers and really great production. You know, the usual complaints were there about his game. I mean, the missed plays or the not hustling back, or I mean, those things that have always been there, but he was playing really well. But then, yeah, the last week or two, he's completely, I mean, I think it really almost started with that Cleveland game, and he's always been a good passer. It's just the way he's managed to get the team involved, and you start to see some of that feeding into other guys where suddenly everyone's making the extra pass. The ball movement has been so much better lately, and just, you know, I don't know if it's just it takes time to build the trust with the team or it all starts with Cousins or what it might be, but there has been a lot of encouraging things about the play of Cousins and the team lately.
Well, let's be honest. How did you think they were going to do on this road trip?
Oh, I wasn't expecting much at all.
Yeah. Did you see 3 wins on the, after this road trip?
if I did, it wasn't the three that they won.
Yeah, right.
You know, like beating Charlotte and Cleveland. I mean, those are two tough teams. Dropping the Philly game. I mean, right. Kind of going back to what we started on tonight. I mean, nothing makes sense with this team as far as which games they win, which games they lose. But yeah, I think 3-5 would have been a pretty optimistic view going into this road trip.
Yeah, and you'll take
especially
it.
After how bad the homestand was.
Right. So now it's all about building at home. Start getting some home wins. You know, you got to build on that. And you know, I'm curious what your thought. Are they just better? Or are they a better team without Rudy Gay? Do you think that's part of it too?
I don't think they're inherently a better team without Rudy. Like, I don't think Rudy's a net negative.
I agree.
It's hard to look at what he brought to the team and come to that conclusion. What I think it might have been more than anything is that without Rudy being in the picture at all, like knowing that he's gone, it kind of shifted things in terms of, I think it shifted a little bit of Jaeger's coaching philosophy with the roster. I think it shifted the mentality of some of the guys who were on the roster as far as what their role had to be going forward. And I think it shifted the way that Boogie viewed his other teammates and what he had to get out of them.
Yeah, he realized he had to trust them because that's all he had in a way.
Yeah, like either he could try to do it all himself and
right.
be frustrated and lose, or he could trust the guys who were still on the floor with him and, you know, get them involved and rely on them to carry some of the load as well.
And the other thing that was a positive, really, I mean, you go back to earlier this season, Tolliver wasn't really playing. Ty Lawson at one point did not look like he belonged in the NBA. He couldn't shoot at all, right? Willie wasn't playing. Malachi wasn't playing. Aflalo looked awful. All of a sudden, these guys are starting to hit shots. I know we break down these games so much. Sometimes it's as simple as that. Guys who were missing or not playing and missing a ton of shots are now making shots. Like Aflalo, I think the last I saw maybe went down tonight, he's shooting 40% from three. There was a stretch where he couldn't make anything. And he hasn't been perfect by any means, don't get me wrong. But it's just encouraging to see some guys who weren't playing or weren't playing well starting to play well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those guys were involved, but they weren't. It's funny, like you said, I mean, sometimes it comes down to it just being a make-or-miss league. And if you're missing a lot, things go bad.
Yeah.
You start hitting your shots and kind of regressing to the mean, and things start going good again. And yeah, I mean, I don't think any of us had aspirations of Aflalo being some dead-eye shooter the whole year, but
right.
I mean, it's at least been better.
And that's a positive sign.
We got some positivity going out of this show here, dude.
Well, I think when you have a terrible homestand that is so depressing that we just leave, you know, blown leads, or you're getting blown out and you're trying to come back, and then you hit the road thing and it's going to be the worst, and all of a sudden it's, oh, wow, they went 3-5 and they beat the Cavs? Yeah, the Philly game kind of sucked. The Houston game, who cares? I mean, that's just a tough game anyway, even if you're ready to go. I think all things considered, it leaks. The optics are from watching the games. They're playing better basketball. You highlight it. They're moving the ball better, and that's encouraging. Now, you hope that these injury bugs that's hitting them, whether it's Lawson or Temple, hopefully these are short-term things because they can't survive without those guys, in my opinion.
Yeah, not long term they can't. I mean, but to your point, if you told me going into this road trip after that homestand,
yeah,
all right, the Kings are going to go 3-5, they're going to beat the Cavs, you're going to see good ball movement, Boogie's going to be player of the week, and you're going to get production from Willie Cauley-Stein and Malachi Richardson.
Yes,
like, I'd have been thrilled.
Exactly, I love it.
Like it's tough to be disappointed with that being the outcome of the last eight games.
Yeah, it could be a lot worse right now. I mean, there's no doubt about it. So, I mean, when you look at the start of the road trip, the Memphis game was terrible. Chicago was bizarre. Yeah. Detroit, nice. Cleveland, of course, weird, but they still won, and they found a way to win, even being down in overtime, so I'll take that. They should have won the Pacers game. Charlotte, they squeak out a win. Philly game ticks me off. I mean, I don't know. Are we making excuses for them? Because I'm going, wow, this could be an even better trip. Or is that just a mark of a bad team?
They easily could have won 5 or 6 games on this road trip.
But I feel like, couldn't you say it the other way, though, too? Because you go, well, you know, Cleveland didn't miss 17 free throws against them.
It's true. It could have been an 0-8 road trip pretty easily. I mean, they were down early to the Pistons, too. I mean, they were getting blown out at the start. So, yeah, I mean, it easily could have been an 0-8 road trip. So I guess it goes both ways.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's a pretty good note for us to end it on. A little bit of positivity with the tinge of, like, it could have been better, but it could have been worse. I think that's the Kings in the nutshell. So, Deuce, why don't you share with us all the many, many places that the good people can listen to you these days?
Well, you know, I've got an exclusive for you. We are launching a website that launches Wednesday, February 1st. So if you're listening to this, that's, yeah, you're probably listening to it right now. Anyway, it's going to be deuceandmo.com. deuceandmo.com. I do the podcast with Morgan Reagan. We do it Monday through Friday for Kings fans. It's a sports podcast, so we do talk NFL, but we do talk a lot of Kings, and it's 45 minutes to 60 minutes of uninterrupted conversation where we just have a good time. And, you know, we don't take, you know how we are. We don't take it too serious. We have a good time. When I say we don't take it too serious, we mix in humor with it, you know? And I'm excited for the new website, deuceandmo.com, because we're going to add some bonus content. We're going to have a lot of fun. And we're super, super happy with all the support we've received from people all over Northern California. So it's a good time. So deuceandmo.com. You can find out how to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, of course, on YouTube, Facebook, all that stuff. And yeah, you can see me on Good Day Sacramento, too.
Yeah. I mean, how'd they let you on TV? I mean, just...
You know, Greg,
is that just a big oversight? Or?
I mean, I like how you're taking shots at me now, and I appreciate that. But you know, it's an amazing transition. It's kind of like here's the comparison I'd make, and I'm sure others will say the same. It's like when Steve Kerr went from being on TNT to the head coach of the Golden State Warriors. That's how seamless it's been. It's like, wow, this guy went from radio to TV, and he can do it all. I mean, people are buzzing about this right now. So, honestly, though, TV's been fun. I literally had no TV experience, and I'm so fortunate that the boss over at Good Day Sacramento called me after the whole thing at KHK ended, and like, hey, you want to try this TV thing? I'm like, yeah. So I tried it out, and I've been doing that, and it's been fun. It's weird. I don't get a lot of sleep because I've got that. You know, I'm the executive radio producer for Kings basketball on the radio side with the G-Man and Jason Ross and Henry Turner and Bobby Jackson. So I think I counted today. I've worked 16 straight days. I'm not complaining. It's fun because ultimately I get paid to do stupid things on TV and I watch basketball. And then I do this a podcast I'm having a blast with. And it's fun working with Morgan. So life is good, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, that sounds like the dream. Like, you tell me, like, I'm going to do stupid things on TV and talk about basketball and watch basketball.
Yes.
I'm game. Like,
exactly.
That's it.
I mean, literally today, I went to a party city to talk about how to decorate for your Super Bowl party. I did the Dirty Bird on TV. I mean, is that really hard? No, it's not. You know, I make stupid, corny jokes. I mean, what? It's really just, it's fun. So I can't complain.
Hell, I do that for free.
I know. I mean, I see it on Twitter all the time. well, seriously, I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, it's always a pleasure having you here, and so I'm going to wrap up the show real quick. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Sacktown Royalty Show. Of course, you can find us on iTunes, subscribe, leave us a rating, leave us a comment, let us know how we're doing. We should also be on all the other streaming things, so if there's somewhere where you get podcasts and you aren't able to find this, let me know and I'll fix that. Chime in on sacktownroyalty.com. Let us know how we're doing. In the meantime, thanks for listening.
Get a free audiobook and 30-day trial today by signing up at www.audibletrial.com/sacktownroyalty. That's www.audibletrial.com. IBLETRIAL.com/SacktownRoyalty.
I'm ready to take the next step.
I'm ready for a university that will help me advance in my education and career.
A university that will make me feel supported and connected.
I'm ready for ODU Online.
Click this ad or go to online.odu.edu today.
I'm ready to make my credits count.
I'm ready to take classes from a university that will help me build on my experience to prepare me for the future.
A university that will make me feel supported, encouraged, and connected.
Click this ad or go to online.odu.edu today.